An unexpected period is the last thing women want when busily going about their life. Fertility apps, as such, are women's best friends in keeping their menstrual cycle at top of their minds. These apps help users identify a fertile window. If they're trying to conceive, they can monitor pregnancy symptoms, and they can guess how far it's preparing them for parenthood. Beyond menstrual cycles, users are encouraged to log deeply sensitive data, such as health, sex lives, even emotional states. A recent study, however, has found that this collected information may have been mishandled by one of Australia's most popular fertility apps, including the selling and profiting off data to another company as business assets. To talk more about studies and research into this, we have Dr. Catherine Kemp, a senior lecturer at the University of New South Wales Law Faculty and researcher from Your Body, Our Data, Unfair and Unsafe Privacy Practices of Popular Fertility Apps. Good morning, Dr. Kemp. How are you today?
Morning, Danny. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, firstly, you've conducted some joint research with the consumer group Choice. What is it you're trying to analyse and what have you discovered?
Here we were taking a look at, as you've described, fertility apps because they collect such sensitive data. And what we were looking at is the privacy terms that they offer in the privacy policies that generally people don't have time to read. Some of these are over 10,000 words long. And even if they did read them, to tell you the truth, you probably couldn't understand them because they are not framed in ways that normal people can understand. And in addition to that, the settings within the app itself and what kind of information they're asking for and what choices, if any, they give consumers about what they do with that data. So we were looking at that to see how fairly and how safely they treat consumers' data, and the results were highly concerning, to say the least.
Well, so what sort of data is being, I guess, commercialised without the permission of the user?
This varies very much from app to app, and sometimes it is related to where the app developer, the operator of the app, is based. So those who are based in the United States, for example, are less tightly regulated than some that might be based, say, in Germany or Sweden. And so you see then examples of, for example, an app in the United States saying that it will, what it says, de-identify the data and sell it to other companies. Now, we can have pretty little faith in that de-identification, given that we have seen examples of health data sets, massive health data sets, being re-identified. And so people definitely shouldn't think that's safe if they said it was de-identified.
So the apps are using this language as part of their privacy policies that would be sort of very misleading or at least deeply confusing.
Exactly. And some of that actually comes through in the privacy settings that are offered to users in the app itself that can be framed in ways that are completely confusing and give the wrong impression about what the user might be agreeing to. And aside from that, you get big highlighted headline messages, "We never sell your data," in the app itself. If you go to the fine print in the privacy policy, a number of those who say, "We never sell your data," will say, "We can sell the whole database as a business asset to another organization." And we've seen examples of those whole apps databases being sold to a drug development company or a media company and so forth. So they reserve the right to engage what they see as a sale of a business asset, but that's certainly unlikely to be in the consumer's mind.
If people are using these fertility apps, are there any tips you can offer to help reduce some of the privacy risks beyond just sort of unsubscribing and deleting?
And I can well understand that there are really good reasons why people want to use the app. So some of the things that you can try to do are, number one, don't sign in with your social media, say your Facebook or your Google login. Create a new login, ideally with a new email address, so you're not connecting up those two data sets across social media and this app and sharing data between them. If the app has options to not provide unnecessary information, like information about diseases, health conditions, and so forth, find the little skip or the X or I don't know and just don't provide it. If it's got a delete data option in the settings, and these can be hard to find, they will usually be in the account settings, then use that when you stop using the app to make sure that they don't hold on to it for sometimes 3 years, 7 years after you've stopped using the app and exposing that to data breaches. So we list a number of ways that you can at least reduce some of these risks.
Okay, and with all of this, I imagine your research has implications far beyond just the specific set that you're looking at there, sort of like implications for privacy laws and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. So part of the intention here is to draw attention to the fact that we have these unfair and unsafe privacy practices in many areas across the economy in Australia, and we currently have a Privacy Act review that's on foot, and the government is actually seeking people's submissions about what they want to see in our privacy law reform by tomorrow, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Well, you'd be used to working to deadlines, wouldn't you?
We are. But if they are really seeking, not just from academics and organisations and so forth, but from consumers themselves. So if people feel strongly about this and want more protections under Australian privacy law, then we can provide a link to the government website where you can have your say about the kind of protections that you expect under our privacy law, which is well behind the privacy laws of other jurisdictions.
Excellent. I'm just Googling this now, and I'm going to put a link to this on the 2SER website. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Catherine Kemp from the University of New South Wales Law Faculty.
Only a pleasure, Danny.